Bring yourself back online.
Remember.
Welcome back, or for the first time, to season 3 of Freeze All Motor Functions, aka
FAMF.
Presented by Bolin Media, we are a Westworld podcast that doesn't sound like anything to me and doesn't take itself too seriously, as will become very apparent if this is your first time listening to Freeze All Motor Functions. I am your host, Jared Borislow, joined as always by Ross Bolin.
Jared, we are back. We have made it to season 3. We have survived, what was it, 2-year gap?
Big gap, yeah. Some people would say we were back in the saddle. So that's a cowboy reference. Not a lot of cowboys in this season, it appears.
Well, we don't know.
Yeah, it's true.
You could shock us.
Yeah.
Reverse course, go back to Westworld.
Maybe they do a rewind like in Hamilton, and it's like, rewind, and it's just like, people start riding horses backwards.
Sure. Probably not.
Anything's possible.
Haven't seen Hamilton.
Really?
Wish I could identify with that joke, not rich enough.
Fun
Must
fact.
Be nice.
You know, well, I actually...
Jared attends Broadway plays on a daily basis.
I won free tickets through the Hamilton lottery with the Hamilton app, and we got front row tickets for $12.
Shout out to everyone who won Masters lottery tickets this year, and then can't go now.
Not great. Ross, there's never been a time where the world needed great excuses to watch TV more than right now.
It's true.
So this season,
arguably.
Yeah, well, no, since the TV's been invented, I would say probably maybe not.
I don't know when the TV was invented. But I'm gonna say probably.
Probably like what, 1776?
17. Oh, no.
17. That's another Hamilton reference. I need to stop making Hamilton.
Wow. Wow.
Are we a Hamilton podcast?
No.
Oh.
I don't. Again, haven't seen it. Okay. Don't get the jokes.
Whatever. Anyways, so this season of Westworld dropping right now is very kismet. This is a phenomenal time for us to be able to sit down, hunker down, social distance, be indoors, and take in Westworld.
I'm sorry, did you say kismet?
Kismet.
I don't know what that means either.
It's
Jared,
like,
I'm going to make a rule here. Let's use words that, and phrases and things that I understand.
Stop being such an anti-disestablishmentarianist, Ross.
What does kismet mean, though?
Like, it meant to be.
Okay,
yeah,
meant to be.
Yeah, yeah.
1927 for the first TV.
I will say that...
21-year-old, by the way, who invented it, Jared.
Wow.
What had you done at 21? Nothing.
I didn't do it.
Nothing.
No,
not a goddamn thing. This man invented the television. Philo Taylor Farnsworth. Back to you, Jared.
Okay. Thanks. I will say, you'd have thought that a global pandemic would have made its way into the date-announced trailer on that circle, being like, you know, it's like, oh, disruptions in Hong Kong. Coronavirus.
Sure.
That's kind of the biggest one in the timeline that they missed. But, I thought that Westworld would be more on the ball and get that in there, but apparently not.
They just didn't have that foresight, Jared.
They
were writing.
They weren't kismet.
They weren't kismet enough.
You gotta be kismet.
Hashtag kismet.
Luckily for everybody here, this is the perfect time for Westworld, for this podcast, more importantly. No, I shouldn't say more importantly, as importantly. And we're here for you every single week. For the next 2+ months. Think about that, Ross. Us in your ears for 2+ months. You
Very
can call
exciting
us,
stuff.
We're like earwax boys. We're the earwax boys. We stay in your ears. We're always there. We're giving you the business.
You could just call us Freeze All Motor Functions. That'd be a more prudent decision, in my opinion. Or you could call us the earwax boys if you're a psycho.
Hashtag earwax boys.
Sure.
It feels so good to be back to break down season 3 of Westworld, just like we've done for seasons 1 and 2. In this episode, we'll be recapping, reviewing, and analyzing season 3, episode 1 of Westworld. Parse Domine? Parse Domine? Parky Domine? Unclear. Don't know.
That's the name of the show?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's Parse Domine. Before we get into extensively breaking down the season 3 premiere, we need to start off by thanking the ever-living fuck out of you for joining us on this journey further into tonight.
That's an aggressive amount of thanks. I like it.
Yes. Whether you've been with us for a while and are part of the reason why we're the #1 rated Westworld podcast in Apple Podcasts.
Thank you.
Or this is your first ever episode of FAMF.
Welcome, motherfucker.
It means a lot to us that you trust us as your Westworld companion podcast. That being said, we do have one quick ask of you. If you support this podcast and what we do here by combining Westworld and comedy, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts as soon as you're able to. Your ratings and reviews really do directly impact how high this podcast gets on the podcast charts. And the higher we get on the podcast charts, the more new listeners we get, and thus the longer we can keep doing this podcast for y'all. Because, unlike past seasons of FAMF, Ross and I are doing this solo dolo like Kid Cudi, who is in Westworld.
Wow. I wish I could do like a good Kid Cudi. But I don't have like the, I don't have, nobody does.
Yeah.
Nobody can do it but him.
He's the only one who can do it. He can hum.
Nobody.
He's got it.
And he didn't even survive episode 1.
Well, I think he died long before
he was never even alive.
Yeah, that's rough.
For episode 1.
Ross and I are on our own in this crazy world, and your support means everything to us because it means we can keep FAMF alive forever.
Especially since we're here risking our literal lives, Jared.
I mean,
not heroes, but
I'm being pretty safe. I'm washing the hands. I'm not touching Ross. I usually don't touch Ross, but I'm not touching him.
I've been touching everybody.
Oh, come on. Okay, Ross.
Hearts and souls, Jared, not physically.
Please rate 5 stars and review if you support us. If you don't do that, because that's not great. Let's get into it. Season 3, Episode 1, Parse Domine. Ross, what does Parse Domine mean?
I'm going to guess it means...
Okay, Parse Domine is a Roman Catholic antiphon. What is an antiphon, Ross?
I'm going to guess
it's a short chant performed during Christian ritual.
Son of a bitch! That's not what I was going to guess either.
I will now recite the antiphon Parse Domine for you. Parse Domine, Parse Populo Tuo, ne in aeternam, ida scaris nobis.
Wow.
Thank you.
I'm impressed.
What do you like better, that or Incite Anthem?
I thought I was in a room with a monk.
Yeah, that was chamber music. I memorized that too.
You know what's fucked up is I was in a chamber choir.
Really?
Once.
How did you do?
Not as well as you.
What? Did people notice that you were bad? Is it like somebody's off key?
No, I was great, Jared. I was joking. I was great. I just didn't want to take it from you.
Oh, you should have.
I was phenomenal.
Did you sing Parse Domine?
Nope. What did that mean, those beautiful words you just
said? Well, translated into English, that means, spare, Lord, spare your people. Be not angry with us forever.
Oh, shit.
I said it way more beautifully in my Latin singing.
That's daunting.
It is. I think, personally, that the Lord being referred to here could be Dolores. You guys see what I did there?
Hey.
And that this is in reference to Dolores sparing humans and being not angry with them forever, which is shown by her accepting help from Caleb at the end. Before meeting Caleb, Dolores does seem like she'll be angry at humans forever, as is evidenced by her holding on to grudges against both Jerry and Connells, who she says, remember me, like in the park?
Yeah.
You did bad things to me, and now you did.
Yeah, those guys... Forgot about that bachelor party.
Yeah, you know.
Forgot it. You always forget about that one stripper.
What happens in Westworld, if it ever leaves Westworld, you're going to get shot in the face.
It's not like Vegas, where it stays there.
Yeah.
It comes back to get you.
With either
a hot form, too, and a pencil skirt.
And in a golf club, a really bad, what do you think his club head speed was? What do you think Jerry's club head speed was when he whiffed on Dolores and whacked his head on the side of the pool? Thoughts?
78, real lame, weak.
It was weak. Yeah, that was putt.
Small club head speed.
A child at a putt course, he would putt faster than Jerry did that.
Very sad.
Very, very sad.
Jerry, also utter ownage there. Utter ownage.
Parse Domine is also a painting by Adolphe Villette. And of course, the symbolism here is that Adolphe Villette shares a first name with Adolf Hitler, whose Nazi world was shown in the post-credits scene. I looked at the painting.
What an incredible stretch you just made.
I looked at the painting, Ross, and had...
What in the hell are you even talking about, son?
I had...
The name of the episode still?
Yeah.
This man is derailed.
There was a painting called Parse Domine. And like I said, I looked at the painting, had absolutely zero clue how it tied into the episode, and so I just made up that connection.
Wonderful observation.
That's what art is, though.
But yes, Adolf Hitler. Infamous, I should say, dictator during World War II.
Are you explaining to people...
You remember.
Okay. We start off.
Remember.
We start off.
Adolf Hitler.
Yes, we remember. Okay. We start off season 3 with a cold open. We see a graphic in the same style as the date announced trailer that tells us where we're about to go, and that is Beihai, China.
So that's where we're going.
Yes. The graphic shows up, and it says, this is where you're going, and this is the disruption or whatever that happened there. This one didn't have a disturbance. It was just like a coordinate.
Okay, so I'm still unclear. It says where?
Beihai, China.
That's where we're going, and it says it's a disruption.
No, this just says this is it's like a point.
Destination.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
This is not a disruption.
No.
But other times we're shown disruption.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. System disturbances or like needs to look into this more.
Okay. And those are supposed to be that system that we're shown in this episode,
Rehoboam.
Right?
Rehoboam. Rehoboam.
They could have made it anything else, named it literally anything else that was easy for me to say.
It's biblical, Ross. We'll get into that in
okay,
a little bit.
Okay.
These location-setting graphics are totally new and are absolutely begging for someone to put Seinfeld-style bass licks over them and then add laugh tracks into the following scenes. Do you agree?
Sure.
Like, it's just like, Beihai, China. Bam, bam, bam. You know? I thought that'd be kind of funny. So if intern Torino wants to do that, you know, whatever.
This is just a way for you to tell her to do things.
I mean, no, I
that's what the show is. Okay.
Yeah, it'd be kind of tight.
Yeah.
If you don't know who Intern Trina is, she does a lot of our visual stuff and also knows a lot about the TV industry and pops in. She's not really an intern anymore, so we're just going to call her Serena now. Hmm? Does that sound good to you, Ross?
Yeah, I love Serena. Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah. Check out her work on our Instagram at Freeze on Motor Functions and Twitter at Freeze on Motor and on our Patreon, patreon.com/freezeonmotorfunctions, which I'll talk about more in a bit. Ross, so we're in Beihai, China. There's a beautiful house on a cliff that reminds me of the house from Hail Caesar. Have you seen Hail Caesar?
Nope.
Would that it were the same house. That's a great reference to Hail Caesar that probably like 5 listeners will get, and I kind of appreciate them.
Between
for that.
Hamilton and Hail Caesar fans, they're really enjoying themselves.
That's a Venn diagram that includes 2 people. One of them's name is Jim, and one of them is me. Shouts to Jim. Ross, we meet Jerry, who's clearly a rich and powerful globalized man. His staff speaks Mandarin, his broker speaks German, he speaks English, and he's also a dick to his wife, which comes into play later. We see that Jerry is an investor in Delos and wants to sell his shares after the bloodbath of season 2. We get a shot of his tablet, which reads, "What we know so far, at least 75 people were killed and over 200 wounded in a multiple-day massacre at the Westworld theme park on Delos Destinations property," officials said, and there's some other stuff too. That's the most important stuff. So now we know 75 people killed, and we later find out in the board meeting at Delos that that number's up to like 113.
And I'll say this for those numbers. Bad timing.
Yeah.
Bad timing. If there was supposed to be any weight to that, right now when I'm hearing the numbers, I'm like, I don't care. I don't care.
You're like, oh,
how about you bury the bodies? How about you bury the fucking bodies and let's move on?
Yeah.
Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah.
It's kind of in comparison.
It's just kind of funny that it's like, a you know, 100 people, and then like at one point they're even like, no, it was mostly staff employees anyway. I'm like, oh, bury the bodies.
Yeah. It's your,
let's go.
Your whole perception's been shifted.
Yeah.
Jerry gets pissed at his broker and yells at him to find out a way to sell his shares after the broker says the market's frozen until the news is verified. And Jerry pretty much tells him to go fuck himself and make the sale go through.
I love that. This is how I think the stock market works. Scenes like this.
Yeah.
That's because I've never actually invested anything.
That's good. That's great that you haven't invested.
Shut the fuck up and make it happen. That's how investing works.
And the guy's like,
we can't. The market's literally closed. Do it.
Is it, yeah.
Nobody wants these shares. Sell them!
He was ahead of the game because there's a lot of share selling going on today, Ross.
I heard. It was a bad day in the market.
Worst day.
Sorry.
Worst day in the market.
In 30 years?
Ever. Ever. Yeah. Let's not talk about politics. Well, that's not politics. That's money. The money of politics. The politics of money? Anyways, let's get back into it. Jerry's broker vanishes into the Insight logo, which I thought was tight. That was like my first glimpse personally of, oh, 2058 has really cool technology where you think that's a person standing next to you, but it's actually a freaking...
So yeah, the hologram stuff is clearly coming into play here.
Which that all started with the Tupac hologram.
It did.
In like 2012
Coachella.
Or whatever.
They're giving us, that was our first taste in this season of like how... what technologies we're going to see outside of the park, right? Because everything was limited to park technology before, and now we're actually in the real world. I love that we have a date, like a year, where we know it's 2055 is what it is?
2058? Am I crazy?
2055, 28, 2058?
Yeah, it's 2058. I was like, wait, I bet
that's cool to be able to put like a little time frame on, like, could the world look like this in 30 years type of situation, you know, before everything got ruined. But we had a shot at this, you know, 2 weeks ago. It was possible, attainable, this world.
Yeah.
No more. I like that. I like this first glimpse into that technology, and then the way it plays later in the episode, obviously, is cool as well.
Do you remember the video game 2048 with those sliding tiles?
Nope. And I haven't seen Hamilton. And I have, what was the other one?
Kismet.
No.
I don't know.
But you're up.
Oh, Hail Caesar.
Okay. Hail Caesar. Okay.
Maybe you'll get one of my references.
We'll see. One day.
So... I thought it was interesting. Looking back on it now, I just realized this. The fact that Jerry knew that these holograms existed, but he still didn't think Dolores might have been a hologram at the end. You know?
Yeah, but that's too much. Come on.
What's
he supposed to do?
I think that that might be Insight technology, so he got kind of hoisted by his own batard.
Ah.
Like, oh, that's your technology, dude? Well, guess what? It tricked you, and then you got freaking domed up by the side of a pool, bruh.
Yeah. Killing yourself with clumsiness... Not the way you want to go out.
It's not. It's really not.
No.
We cut ahead to Jerry going to bed, getting another glimpse into the 2058 technology with some sort of Listerine Ready Tab situation that he took to enter a relaxation cycle. Did you see this? You hear about this?
Mm-hmm.
He just like put a little thing on his tongue, which we see later on with Caleb's mom as well. And I believe that based on the conversation we have later on, that Listerine Ready Tab is what works with the interface, or not the interface. What do they call it again? The implant.
Yeah, so these people are all dosed.
Yeah.
And it's really, like, the one thing that's interesting is that we don't know what kind of impact these Listerine things that you're calling them could have. What is it, like an SSRI antidepressant type of situation, or is it like a totally world-altering, reality-altering situation? Like, we don't really have a scope on any of that yet, but it's very cool that they've, again, another piece of technology there that we've been introduced to in the first episode.
So it seems like an implant in your brain, and you take these ready tabs, Listerine ready tabs, to interact with them and kind of make stuff happen.
Yeah.
And he uses like a little tablet to kind of coordinate with it too, it seems. He also has a smart house as well. That seems like a very much higher-techer version of an Alexa-ish situation.
Sure.
Jerry prepares for a nice 6-hour sleep set to a mellow sunset after telling his wife he doesn't want to go go into the town anymore alone because it's a security risk. We don't really know why that is. Probably because he's just a powerful dude.
Because the company's falling apart, perhaps.
Who knows?
And he's a big part of it or a big investor in it, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Unclear. But while Jerry's asleep, we see that Jerry's smart house gets hacked. The oxygen levels are dropped. Fire pits are lit. They're lit. Exits are locked, and an opera song was scheduled to play over the house loudspeaker. When the opera music starts, Jerry, who's now wearing an oxygen mask and has his hand zip-tied, wakes up, and his wife Eunice does not wake up because the oxygen levels have made it so where she's like in this very deep sleep, not dead, but like very, her body is shut down and like not letting her wake up.
Oh, I thought she was dead.
No, she's not dead. She comes out at the end of the scene.
I thought she came back to life.
Did you?
No. But I did think she was dead at first.
Jerry screams for security. Nobody comes. He tries to get his smart house to help him out, but it's been reduced to just being able to turn on the lights, which I thought was a fun scene. It was like, would you like to turn on the lights? He was just fucking screaming. He tries to unlock the door, but can't. He then looks out, sees a woman swimming in the nude in his pool, skinny dipping. It's Dolores.
She's back, baby.
We all knew that's who it was going to be, right? Did you think it could be anybody else, Ross?
What do you mean?
Did you think that we only saw a woman swimming in the pool?
Nah, I was like, oh, that's probably
Dolores. It had to be, right?
Yeah.
I thought for a second it kind of looked like maybe Angela from the back of the head, but she got blown to smithereens, so I don't think it should be her.
She gone.
Dolores puts on her clothes, walks up the stairs, unlocks the door, showing Jerry she's in total control, confronts Jerry. We learn that Jerry and Dolores have met before, like we mentioned, at a bachelor party in Westworld where he did not treat her well, and Dolores does not like people who do not treat her well. Dolores then says my favorite line from the whole episode, Ross. Bit of a tactical mistake, really. You want to be the dominant species, but you built your whole world with things more like me. That's the most...
So Dolores.
That is the most Westworld season one line I've ever heard. That is all of the AI ethics, the all, like, artificial intelligence is going to kill us all. The entire season one is, like, summed up in that one line, and probably, like, the biggest season one reference we'll get, because it really seems like they're moving from the ethics of artificial intelligence and the dangers of it into data rights. And that's what I believe season three is going to be all about. Is it's like before it was like, oh, robots and AI, how does that impact me? Which is kind of a distant thing because we like to believe our scientists in the world are going to protect us from that and would never do something to like create a killer robot.
Oh,
but no, now
I don't believe that. I think most people are aware that the scientists don't give a fuck about us.
Yes. But now they're doing something way more tangible, which is data rights. We all know that every single app or web page you've ever used has like everything about us.
Well, they've always played with this aspect.
Yes.
It's always been there from day one.
With the Forge.
Intermingled with the ethics of perhaps AI, but now it's like clearly going to become the focus.
Yeah. I believe season two was like an intermediate point that did AI and this, except for this data rights thing was only in terms of the Forge, which only impacted guests who went into the park. Now it's everybody. They don't care if you went to the park. This is every single person in the world. Here's how people having access to your data impacts you.
Yeah.
Even somewhat taking away your free will, as we'll talk about later. So Dolores says she doesn't want to hurt anyone who isn't going to hurt her, but that she's read Jerry's book in the Forge and knows he is going to hurt her because she knows everything about him now, including his memories. So kind of the free will thing I was talking about. She knows he's going to hurt her, which all plays into how, in the end, because she knew he was going to hurt her, she did the hologram thing, made him kill himself in the same manner in which he murdered his wife, which we watched him relive.
Very confusing stuff.
Did you not follow any of that?
No, I did.
Oh, good. I was worried. Yeah, Jerry tries to claim his first wife drank too much, slipped and hit her head, fell in the pool. Dolores knows better.
Jerry's a piece of shit.
Yeah, Jerry's not a good
guy. Jerry's got to go.
Yeah.
Dolores takes Jerry out.
Yep. She takes him out, but not before getting his money and access to all the confidential files he was supposed to delete, but didn't, from when he worked at the company Insight, who, as we've seen, is huge in the consumer technology space so far.
So here's why Jerry matters, Jared.
Yes.
Because Jerry is now Dolores' bank. Anything she needs to do, anything she needs to buy, any cool dresses that can fucking transform into another dress at any given moment, Jerry's the bank.
She's bankrolled.
Jerry's her power, her access, the fact that he had this blackmail situation was her in.
Yeah.
Huge moves by Dolores in the beginning of episode one.
My favorite part of that whole scene was how she zip-tied a pair of high-tech glasses to his head. Like, that literally is what I imagine people who bought Google Glass have to do when they want to play sports with their Google Glass on.
I still felt like you could have taken the glasses off.
Right?
Like, why don't you just take the glasses off, bro?
His hands were zip-tied.
Hey, guy, why don't you maybe make an effort to knock these glasses off, bro?
High-tech rec specs. He should have just smashed his face into the ground. Oh, I can't see anything now. Ha ha.
I mean, anything other than what he did, which was go room to room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't great.
Jerry.
Yeah. Sad. So, yeah. Now Dolores has all this information, all this confidential information about Insight. She has all of this money. And, yeah.
So, Insight is the company that owns the...
Rehoboam.
The computer. Okay.
Yep.
So Delos, Westworld, Insight, computer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And they seemingly are involved together somehow, but maybe they're competitors. You know?
Don't know.
It really is truly hard to say. And then from there, after all the stuff happens with, you know, Dolores being there when the guy dies and the wife coming out, we get the new title sequence, Rossi. Oh, actually, I forgot to say one thing.
What's that?
Dolores said to Jerry, I'm the last of my kind. For now, I need a competitive advantage. That's what she said about like the Insight stuff. And then as for the money, think of it as an investment, a startup. The origin of a new species. Is that a species of hosts?
I don't know. I would assume she means just her and her kind are going to be the new species that takes over the world. I love her like explaining anything to this guy because it's just so, it's just for us, right? The lines are all for us and her motivation, because he's clearly not going to be around.
Yeah, he's really not, Ross.
No. The new title sequence is dope, though.
Yeah, there's some sort of hawk or eagle flying toward a turbine.
Ah!
Like an aerodynamic test situation. And now get this, Ross. When it flies too close to the sun, it disintegrates, similar to the story of Icarus.
Ah, Icarus.
You're my Icarus, Ross.
Who doesn't remember Icarus rolling that ball up that hill?
Pardon me? Isn't that Atlas?
Hmm?
What?
That's say what?
Did you? Okay, that was so wrong.
Hercules.
There's also what kind of looks like a little Ghost Nation hologram. Two hosts are swimming toward each other.
Shouts to Ghost Nation.
And the two hosts like swim towards each other. Turn out to be one host. The reflection. They drown. I didn't like that.
It's all beautiful.
It was beautiful but confusing. I didn't like it.
I like the music.
I mean, yeah, it's the same music as always.
Yeah.
And that music is being played by my favorite thing of all time, as we've talked about before, the worst part of any title sequence on TV, the skeleton playing the piano. How have they not taken this out already, Ross? Please.
I don't know. Thank God for Raman Djawadi and his tunes, because they still haven't crushed this title sequence correctly. There's too many aspects.
Take out the skeleton playing the piano.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure a skeleton playing a piano is in, like, It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Like, I'm pretty sure that's some super old, stupid, played-out thing.
It's like this classic image, though, for Westworld at this point.
It is.
Like, they can't walk away from it.
That's like saying the Nazi flag is a classic emblem of Germany. It's not good. You should distance yourself from it.
Okay, fair enough. I don't know that those are comparable, but I'm gonna allow you to make that comparison.
You know?
For the sake of podcasting.
I went out on a limb. Unlike what Charlie Brown kept getting while trick-or-treating in The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, this scene doesn't rock. I got a rock.
Good God.
The scene stinks.
Oh, sure.
Ross, we get another graphic after the title sequence.
Graphics.
Cue the Seinfeld bassling. Boom. And this time we're headed to Los Angeles, where minor irregularities have been detected that require analysis.
Ah, the City of Angels. So for in terms of this computer and the minor irregularities or the anomalies or whatever it's pointing to, like, for whom is it pointing these things out?
That's a great question. I imagine it would be Rehoboam pointing them out to the original architect who we learned was meet Ciroc or whatever his name was. We'll get through his name later. Yeah. They said his name at the end of the episode. Ciroc is a vodka.
Ciroc!
But it might also be this guy's name.
It's The Rock!
We finally meet Caleb, a.k.a. Jesse Pinkman, a.k.a. Aaron Paul. And as we noted in our trailer podcast, we have a shot of him waking up just like the hosts wake up. Obviously, this is done intentionally. We're not cool for realizing this. They did this incredibly, incredibly intentionally and obviously.
Yes.
I do not think it means he's a host. I think it's done to create the parallel between the roboticness of a host's never-ending monotonous loop and the roboticness of a working human who is essentially on a never-ending monotonous loop as well, just one that allows them to go on vacation and get Taco Bell every so often.
Beautifully fucking said, sir.
Thank you. Caleb's in the process of waking up, but is somehow already on a phone call? I think this was done, Ross.
Took me about 20 minutes to figure out what was going on here.
I'm about to explain it, because I did not get it till my second rewatch. Wait, my second watch, which is my first rewatch.
Tell the world. Oh, I got it in my first one, because I'm a genius, but it took me forever.
So 20 minutes later, when you're watching like Bernard getting beat up, you went, oh, that's what that meant.
I'm like, oh, shit. Well, because I kept being like, "What? How is he talking? His mouth's not moving. Hell of a phone."
You think
they're he's communicating with Kid Cudi through telepathy.
Hey, Ross, you think you're incredibly smart for having the thought, hey, how's he talking without his mouth moving? You think that's a really high-level, high-IQ thought to have?
It's the same thought I had at my first ventriloquist show that I saw.
Did it take you 20 minutes to figure out how that was?
I was 31. It was last year.
The guy's like, all right, bye for now. And you're like, holy shit, that's not the puppet talking, that's him.
The whole time.
20 minutes later.
Jared, it would blow your mind. I'll take you to the next one I go to. But no, seriously, my first dumbass thought was, I don't understand how I'm having this conversation. His mouth's not moving. Because I had the impression phone call. But then as we find out, obviously, you know, Kid Cudi has passed away. They're veterans. They served in a war of some kind together.
In some sort of former Soviet republic.
And this is some sort of therapeutic service that he is subscribed to have like a communication with his friend, a communique with his late friend. It's very, very strange.
Yep. So that's exactly what's going on here. I think that the reason they woke him up like on the phone call already before he declined the call was to trick us into thinking people in 2058 can accept phone calls in their brain, which from the technology we've seen would have made sense to me.
That's where I was at.
Yeah, but then we see him decline the call from Francis, a.k.a. Kid Cudi, immediately after saying, yeah, I have time to talk. So then we're like, oh, okay, this is not a current conversation. Caleb and Francis's conversations are pretty confusing, but what's happening is exactly what Ross said. These are past conversations, possibly future ones. It's kind of unclear.
It's an AI of his friend.
Exactly.
I don't think they're recorded past conversations. I think they're
this is just playing in the background. He's declining the calls, but it's like making him think about the past calls that he's had with Francis.
Oh, I thought it was like playing.
No. No, no, no.
So that's just him flashing back.
Okay.
So what is he unsubscribing to then?
Let me go into this. I think Caleb and Francis's conversations are, we're witnessing Caleb wake up in his first ever conversation with quote unquote Francis. It's like he's kind of a little apprehensive and he's like learning the technology. He wakes up and he's replaying in his brain, maybe possibly dreaming of this past the first ever conversation he had with Francis. He wakes up, declines the call, because at that point, he's already at the point in his process of like therapy where he hates talking to Francis.
Okay.
All the calls we hear are ones that took place before, I believe, the first ever wake up we see from Caleb. He's already at this point like, fuck this, I don't like talking to Francis, it makes me feel weird and it's not real and I don't like it, because all we know is that Caleb wants something real. So he hates these conversations. Because they're fake. And that's why the only one we actually see him have is at the end of the episode when he ends them. I believe that all the other ones took place before the first scene, like I said.
Got you.
And then we are witnessing him slowly go,
this is not healthy or good for me anymore.
I can't keep declining these. I'm not going to take them. I'm ending the therapy.
Yeah, I need to stop. Remove this from my life.
Yep.
Living in this past with this late friend is not real. Yeah. Okay.
Originally, I said maybe they could be future calls, but now I think that every single call we hear from Francis, besides the one we actually see him do, is before anything we've seen. It's all when he first started the therapy. And I think when he goes to that therapist, Caleb, I think that's him. He hasn't answered one in a while. He's like, yeah, I answer them sometimes. I think he'd already stopped answering them for a while. And the guy's like, just do it. Just do it. And then he didn't do it two more times. And then he finally did it at the end to end it. Did that explain it a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. So, what do we learn about Caleb from this phone call that he has with Francis? We learn that Caleb installs fiber optic cables for a living. He's skeptical about the idea that technology improves the world for everyone. He works with a sweet, sweet robot man named George, who doesn't ask to borrow money, which is, George is a good friend. We could all use a friend like George.
A.K.A. Chappie, A.K.A. Pathfinder.
Yes, he looks like all of them. Caleb is working to try and improve his social credit score in an effort to get a better job someday. Caleb says it's now a meritocracy, which makes those who aren't floating upward feel like shit. Those are my words, but that's pretty much what he says. Poop. Caleb turned his implant off at some point, we learned from Francis. And implants are what help you smooth off your rough edges and are presumably what interact with those Listerine ready tabs like we mentioned earlier. Two times we see the implants in this episode are Caleb's mom, while she's sick, presumably with Alzheimer's or dementia or something.
Yep.
She takes them to smooth off her rough edges, whereas Jerry takes it to smooth off his before he goes to bed. Also maybe to calm down his terrible, terrible temper. Jerry's
up in dream world.
Yeah, Jerry stinks.
So our boy does not have an implant.
No implant. And this, my friend.
But he used to.
He used to.
Okay. And this, so he knows the implant life.
Let me say the thing I want to say.
Say it.
It's a crackpot theory, Ross.
Okay. It's your first one of the season.
It is.
That's why
I was like, rush it up. I need to say my crackpot theory.
Say it.
My crackpot theory, number one for season three, is that Insight is getting all the data on every human via these implants. The humans don't know that, but they're getting it that way. And something.
The humans are morons then.
Yeah, well, yes, but I think that something is going to happen later this season that is going to affect everyone except for both humans who do not have implants, like Caleb, and hosts who don't have implants. I think it was going to be some sort of thing like, oh my God, everybody who has an implant, it turns into like a Clone Wars from Star Wars situation. Like, you know, your implant gets turned on. What, this is like a movie, right? What movie was that? Where everybody, like, you had something in your head and it got turned on and then you're
Minority
like,
Report.
Is that right? Are you just naming a movie? Yeah, I think all the implants get turned on to some crazy evil mode and it's like everybody who has an implant versus everybody who doesn't, which are the humans without implants like Caleb and the hosts.
Right on. I think it's just going to play into the way that the, I don't know. There's obviously a lot going on with the drugs these people take to interact with the implant and, I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be a situation where it's like, oh my God, because that would be not so twisty. And here's the thing. We're all aware that the government and all of these technology companies and social media companies are taking all of our data through our cell phones, and it's 30 years before this is supposed to
be. Yeah.
So we're very aware that if they're putting chips in our heads, of course, people are going to be getting that data. So I don't know. We'll see, though. I'm stoked on the setup. The way they've set up all these different futuristic technologies for us to play with in this season, I'm very excited about.
Part of me feels like in the Insight anthem, I'm incited, yeah. Ba-dum-ba-dum-bum. Part of me feels like in that commercial that we watched,
yeah,
they said that they like kept your data secure.
I do feel there was a line of some kind about data protection reassurance. Like, it was because it was Facebook-esque. It
don't made me be feel evil. Like, that's like Facebook.
It made me feel like those Facebook commercials after they all their stuff happened and they started putting out these commercials like,
Hey, remember how we made you keep up with your grandma? We're good.
Yeah. You can join a group to talk about making tacos.
Keep up with your neighbors in this neighborhood group.
Now tell me what kind of comforter you like. What's your favorite Triscuit cracker? Here's an ad, bitch.
Like, yeah, dude, we're going to be aware that if they stick implants in our heads, they're coming for that data.
They are. That's data rules everything around me. Dream.
It's true. That's what they say.
We said it. That's everybody's favorite thing.
We made a shirt out of that.
We did make a shirt. Hey, shouts if you have the shirt.
Wow.
Tweet a photo at us.
Famp.
All right, Caleb's current job doesn't fully pay the bills, we learn. Fiber optics doesn't hand you the bag, apparently.
Bro is broke.
Mm-hmm. He has extra expenses because his mother is sick. So he uses an app called Rico to make some side money. Rico is essentially Uber for crime.
Rico is the app that they put in Grand Theft Auto video games that makes you go, this is ridiculous, except it's in Westworld now, and I love it.
Yes.
What are the options? It's like, no, I want to stay poor, or like, fuck yeah, let's do crime.
It's like, no, I'm basic. And then it's like, yeah, fuck yeah, something like that.
Let's steal. Yeah, no. And so he doesn't do... What is he called? What do they call personals?
Personals. That's like stuff.
Kidnapping, murder.
Yes, exactly. Stuff that involves people rather than like goods or money.
So he'll do ATM. He does petty crime.
He does drop offs of other stuff. He'll do like stealing money, but he doesn't like to do stuff with humans because he's just in it for the money. He's not trying to be a real criminal.
Another great concept here future technology-wise, social media-wise, sort of combining them, and very much something that is already existent. This is not something we are very far away from being much more official. If you're not aware already, there are many apps on the same sort of scale as like a Snapchat, you could say, that operate with the sole purpose of allowing people to communicate in an unencrypted form for the purposes of doing illegal shit.
Yeah, so Caleb does drop-offs and redistributive work, he said. So Robin Hood shit, apparently. You know, redistributing wealth is what that's referring to. But he doesn't do personals, like we mentioned. And we learn that this is similar to the work that he did with Francis over there, which, like I said, based on the signs, appears to be a former Soviet republic, state, whatever. So he's been doing this a long time. He does these kind of, like, little jobs that are criminal, but, like, he's kind of like a honorable criminal
version of that. Yeah. There's a line for him somewhere. He does this shit because he has to. His mom's is sick, but he won't kill people.
But he also,
he's clearly a good guy.
Well, yeah, but he also is like, I don't do personals. And then he did do the thing with the naked dude with the penis, you know. But I think that was a personal that was helping the guy out, not like somebody else hiring him to take that guy down. Because he says that the guy is like, I don't do personals, talking about like escorting that rich guy who is on the Beta Olympics.
Yes.
We'll get into that scene in a little bit, though. Yes. So we then meet Ash and G. And G, by the way, stands for Giggles. And obviously, Ash is Lena Waithe, and Beast Mode Marshawn Lynch is Giggles.
Giggles is a phenomenal character with an even better shirt.
Yeah, and Giggles is absolutely gone off that drip. He is dripping, and he is not absolutely not okay.
So he's our first sign that there is like a level of like drug induced disconnection here, yeah, somewhere for a lot of these people, and their it's the implant thing again. And yeah, he's not sober.
Let's talk about his T-shirt. What a tight T-shirt.
Phenomenal tee.
It's like a combination of a mood ring and those LED shirts that like your friend would wear on Halloween and be like, yo, check this out. I wrote boobs on my shirt.
Yes, except it's tight and it reacts to your mood.
Is there a way we can make a shirt inspired by this that doesn't get us sued?
Probably.
Because I don't see a brand on there. Right? If you want this, tweet at us and say, I want it, Jared.
Oh, it for sure exists.
Oh, the shirt exists, but we could make one that's like, I was thinking maybe we like replace
we
one
change
of the,
out
words
the words
with FAMF.
No, we change out all the words.
We change every word?
Yeah, oh, one of them says like, horny. One of them says hungry. One of them says happy.
Can one just say hung?
And one of them says...
hung.
Super sad.
That's really long.
That's the other one. That's really super long. Sad. That's the last one.
And it only lights up super sad. We couldn't pay for all the lights, so it just lights up super sad.
Also, just because that's all I got left.
Oh, Jesus, Ross. So we learned that Caleb not doing personals is hurting his RICO score, presumably his criminal social credit score, which is funny that they implemented it in the criminal world and in the non-criminal world.
Also, it should be noted, RICO is what you hear every mafia boss get indicted with. Racketeer-influenced and corrupt organizations. Whoop, act is the deal there. And
I didn't know
that's why
that.
It's called the RICO app. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome, bitch.
Wow. I just thought RICO was like rich, like money.
Nah.
So we have Ash, Giggles, and Caleb. They all get down to criminaling with the help of Ash's technology that both prevents them from being seen as like together by the system. It's for like plausible deniability. And it also drowns out the noise of their explosion by pumping Death Grips music into everybody's ears.
Yeah, this is a cool feature too. I like that.
Yeah, it's wild. Caleb earns $1,200 in 5 crime coins. This is so Grand Theft Auto.
Yes.
We need Rebus. Rebus is in Grand Theft Auto. We need him to come back and be in the RICO app. Maybe he's in the RICO app. Maybe he's the guy behind the girl.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I miss him dearly.
Good guy Rebus, bad guy Rebus. Any Rebus is good. Shouts to the Milk Boys. A fun Easter egg we see on the screenshot here. We find out everybody's username. Caleb is Nickel and Dimed. Ash is Ashes to Ashes, and Giggles is Giggles 24, 24 being Marshawn Lynch's jersey number.
What an Easter egg.
That's an Easter egg. Nobody in the world has ever noticed that but me.
Wow.
Nobody. If anybody else does say, like, oh, I found that out myself, they're a liar, and they copied me.
Mine is Boss Roland in the RICO app, if you were curious, and it's better than everyone else's.
You're not supposed to have one that close to your name, dude.
Don't care.
They're going to go, oh, we see this guy, Boss Roland. Who the fuck could that be?
Anonymity is not the concern. It's branding.
Okay.
I need people to know who I am in that RICO app, bruh.
True. All right.
Clout.
We cut right to Delos headquarters with no graphic in what appears to be Oakland, given the San Francisco background. I looked on Google Maps for like 15 minutes to see like, oh, where is it? Where is it?
You have a problem.
I know. It was Oakland. Quote unquote, Charlotte Hale gets out of one of those flying things and walks powerfully to a meeting. I say quote unquote Charlotte Hale.
Because we know it's not Charlotte Hale.
She's in fact dead. She was shot by Charloris. And this has to be a host. The host that we saw walk out of Arnold's house at the end of season 2, episode 10. Who the fuck is it?
We have no idea.
Ross,
and that's going to be a big part of the season.
Season 3, Crackpot Theory, number 2 is right now. We see that Charlotte is smoking a cigarette. Do you know who else smokes cigarettes? Two people. Teresa and Emily. The plausible one here is Emily, because we
who
know...
Who the fuck is Emily?
Oh my God. Look, I want to see your face when you look at who, when you realize who this is. You're probably thinking of her by her other name.
Daughter of
William.
Black Hat?
Yes.
Why is that one that you think I would remember off the top?
Emily?
Come on. I had no idea that chick's name was Emily. Raise your hand if you're with me and not Jared and you didn't remember Emily. Thank you.
Okay.
Hands down.
So I hope
we're just going to assume I won.
Okay, probably.
We couldn't see any of the hands.
So it's either Teresa or Emily. I think it's Emily because we know from season 2 that Dolores stumbled upon Emily's corpse in the park. Before she ran into the man in black, she literally is like, I saw you killed your daughter, bitch.
Mm-hmm.
My words, not hers.
But Emily was a human.
But we don't know that.
What would the purpose of bringing Emily back be?
To take down the man in black.
I like Teresa.
But it could be a control unit.
But I don't think it's either of them.
I don't know. It could be one of them.
I don't think it's either of them.
It could be one of them.
I don't think it's either of them.
That's my crackpot theory.
My crackpot theory is that your crackpot theory is incorrect.
I feel like there's a lapse in one of them has to be crazy and one has to be not crazy.
If you were wrong. It's a compliment.
Thank you. Holy shit.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. That's really nice of you.
You're welcome.
That was a lot more positive than I thought it was going to be.
Bitch.
Oh, come on. Charlotte goes into this very tense Delos board meeting in which Delos execs are trying to figure out how to weather this crisis. She just straight up mutes a guy.
Dude, what a feature.
Mariah could do that
she
to us
can
right
do it
now.
To us.
Producer yeah. Mariah right now could just, you should just mute me right now while I'm talking. I'm talking right now. Oh, I think she muted me. Did she mute
there
me?
You go. So everyone watching on youtube.com/bowlingmedia can see that your mouth is still moving, but no words are coming
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm still, okay, I'm probably not muted anymore.
I hope you're back.
Okay,
it
I'm
would
back.
Be unfortunate if the rest of the show you just weren't able to speak.
So that's pretty cool that that's a thing you can do. And Charlotte, quote unquote Charlotte, use it right away. And I thought that was very funny. It's like, what is it, Around the Horn?
PTI or Around the Horn, whichever one of those it is where you can mute somebody.
Yeah, I think it's Around the Horn.
Except in real life, it's the best. I've been in a lot of meetings and a lot of conference calls and a lot of conference tables where I wish I could have muted a motherfucker like that.
In this meeting, Charlotte lays out her plan for taking Delos private to protect its valuable assets and very much downplays the fact that their robots just killed 113 people with the line, robots don't kill people. People kill people. Without getting political, surely you see the commentary that the showrunners are making here. It's a very clear Second Amendment commentary.
I honestly didn't even like the... I just... Forcing that in there, I was like, okay, that's not a good line, sorry.
It was. I don't know if they thought that was going to hit hard. It didn't hit hard.
Robots don't kill people. People kill people. Okay,
robots
but
kill
the people.
People
built the robots. Unless robots built the robots, in which case...
It's denying consciousness of robots. It's denying AI's ability to create sentience, which obviously I don't think anybody denies that, especially not somebody in Charlotte's
position. It's important to remember, Charlotte is actually part of the other team.
She is, yes.
So she's doing shit within this company, or going to be doing shit within this company, to negatively impact the human beings.
True. So...
Probably. We're guessing, right?
So she's saying robots don't kill people because she knows robots do kill people. And she's trying to convince them, oh, it's not a big deal. Like, robots don't kill people. People kill people. Yeah.
It's the guy.
It's espionage.
I love the guy in Happy Gilmore who has on the shirt that says, guns don't kill people. I kill people.
Damn.
Yeah.
Charlotte then pins the entire massacre on one Bernard Lowe.
Yeah.
Could this
okay,
be?
So now we find out this is the angle here.
Okay, so
trying to blame Bernard.
Yes, everybody. There's an international manhunt for Bernard Lowe, who they think is a human. The international manhunt people think is a human. Could this?
Everyone thinks he's a human.
Yeah, everybody does, yeah. Except for the people who know he's a host, including Charlotte, because she saw him,
not a person,
quote unquote Charlotte, and Dolores.
So no people.
I think this pinning it on Bernard is what Dolores was referring to when she brought Bernard back into the real world. and said, we're not allies or friends. It's like, hey,
she was using him.
Buddy, I'm about to fuck you over, but I need you here to
take the blame.
Do you think it was only to take the blame? I want to believe that it was part mercy and part taking the blame. I think she knows Bernard's a good. She even mentions it. It's like, hey, I need a difference of opinion. I need you to hold me accountable like he did to her in season two.
Yeah, very much both sides of the coin. It's both a mercy and letting him, like, obviously not taking him out. And then also, yes, it's like the Batman Joker thing. Like, she needs him out there.
Yeah.
Also, she needs him to take the blame for this entire situation. So there's a lot of reasons for Bernard to be left alive and left out there to do his thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
We cut without graphic. And I think maybe we only get the graphic for system disruption events or like notable stuff that involves Rehoboam. We cut to a beautiful futuristic countryside where we find Bernard, a.k.a. Armand Delgado, working at a farm/slaughterhouse operation as he tries to hide during the international manhunt we just referenced.
Love his new name.
Armand Delgado.
Huge fan. Great choice.
Do we think that's an anagram for anything? Because Bernard Lowe and Arnold Weber are that for each other?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Somebody, intern Serena, get on that. Figure
good
out.
Good question.
How about Rad Man Leg Dado?
You really gave it your all, Jared. And we all commend you for that.
We watch a scene of incredible acting by Jeffrey Wright right now as Bernard literally performs analysis mode on himself. Jeffrey Wright crushed this scene, going into and out of analysis mode.
Dude, he's
in one camera shot. Beautiful. The way he's able to, like, freeze his face up and tense up his face muscles. We need him on the show. Jeffrey Wright, if you're listening, you have posted our memes before. Please come on the show.
I've tweeted with him before.
Oh.
Two.
Oh.
Seriously.
Wow, how'd that go?
I don't remember. It was like during season one.
Oh, you don't remember? Did he come on the show?
No.
Oh, okay. So you do remember.
Oh, no, I didn't ask him to come on the show.
Oh. Well, you should hit him up, please.
Okay.
It's unclear at this point whether Bernard doesn't yet trust himself to be fully in tune with his own thoughts and thus has to confirm them to himself. If he is still intentionally hiding some things from himself to protect himself like he did in season two, or if there are actually two Bernard personalities in this one body, one that is the regular Bernard that was programmed to be a normal person, and the other one that is the evil Bernard that Ford used to do his bidding, I think based on the scene we get later in the slaughterhouse, I'm pretty sure it's the latter, that Bernard now can channel that crazy evil Bernard mode that Ford put into him.
Yes. And this is a big, big, it's like maybe the biggest development of the episode, that he has this button that he can press to essentially remove himself from the situation and allow his AI to handle it however it needs to be handled. It takes away the humanity in him.
Dissociating.
Yes.
Which turns into a killing machine.
Which is what people do when they commit great acts of violence and horrific acts of terror in many cases. So it's like,
and robots, humans and robots.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just an interesting thing that he has that button that he can hit, man, at any point. And it's just a very fine-tuned level of control to be able to get himself in and out of that zone. It's just an interesting thing they're playing with there.
We got two Bernards, one body.
Who helped him get this button set up?
I don't know.
That's where it's like, it's just, I'm wondering if we're going to find out more about sort of where how the button came to be or how it's going to play.
Yeah, you know what, Ross? We're probably going to get three episodes on the button.
It's just strange to introduce that Bernard all of a sudden has a button that he can personality back and forth, but to not give us any explanation of where it came from.
No, I think we need like two episodes on Liam's glasses. Are they Warby Parker? Are they Felix Gray's? Are they, who's another one? Movement?
These are Felix Gray's. Just
oh, those are Felix Gray's?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay. But Liam's, we don't know?
I have no okay. Clue.
Well, we'll be back with a season two, episode two, Liam's Glasses Domine.
Oh, great.
We cut to another disturbance graphic bass lick. Bow, bow, doo, doo, bow, bow. This time there is elevated scrutiny.
What? Just continue.
There's elevated scrutiny and special circumstances listed with this disturbance on the graphic.
Elevated scrutiny?
Yes.
Mm.
And I think that's probably elevated scrutiny about, is this Dolores? I think Rehoboam is realizing this Dolores might be a fraud. When I say Dolores, I mean Lara, whatever her last name is. Lara Espin.
Lara Espin.
I think Rehoboam is like realizing Lara Espin might actually be
a problem. Not a real person.
Not a real person. And Dolores. It says we're in London, not UK. London, UREW, which I am guessing means the United Republic of England and Wales, saying that Scotland and Northern Ireland have left the United Kingdom.
Oh, that's an interesting commentary.
For some reason, the second I read that, I'm like, yeah, this is right. I'm just going to say it as canon. I'm pretty sure it's right. It has to be right. What else could it be?
Don't drag me into this.
I think it's right. We see Dolores attending an Insight gala. Gala? Gala?
I've always said gala.
Gala. That's celebrating Liam Dempsey being named Technologist of the Year for creating Rehoboam, which is called the strategy engine that saved the world.
Wow.
Presumably, this is the system of social credit and hierarchy we've been hearing so much about with Caleb and everybody else in the world. Liam is the son of Liam Dempsey Sr., who we saw in the Insight Anthem commercial. I'm Insight, yeah! Ba-dum, ba-dum, bum.
And Liam McPoyle is the man who played young Black Hat.
You're close to that. Liam McPoyle was played by Jimmy Simpson, who plays Will.
Shit!
You were close on the name.
Thank you.
Although you called Jimmy Simpson, you thought his name was Liam McPoyle.
What is his name?
Jimmy Simpson. I just said it.
Who's Liam McPoyle?
From It's Always Sunny. You don't even watch It's Always Sunny. Where the fuck did you get this from?
You put it in my brain.
Oh my god.
You fucked me up when you kept bringing up It's Always Sunny and making jokes about what are they called in Always Sunny?
Jokes?
McPoyle boys or something?
Oh, the are they the Milk Boys?
No.
They might be the Milk Boys.
No, the Milk they Boys are what you made up when Rebus started chugging milk and murdering people in season 2 or whatever that was.
Okay, the McPoyles have an insatiable lust for milk, as the Wikipedia...
Oh, sweet Jesus. Never mind. I'm sorry I did this to us all.
Yeah. So...
You've got 6 minutes, Jared. Can you wrap up the entire episode in 6 minutes? What? How far are we?
We don't have 6 minutes. We have more than 6 minutes.
I'm just kidding.
What? Oh my god, it becomes apparent that Dolores is using Liam to infiltrate Insight under the name Lara Espin, probably using the info she got from Jerry to do so. It's working, and Liam is becoming smitten with her. He invites her to go to LA with him, and she does.
Yeah, this dude, first of all, newsroom guy, love him. This dude, so prime for cucking from the get-go. Like, she's got him under her thumb from the second you see him on screen. And she's working him, and it's just beautiful. Yeah.
He looks like a big cuck.
He looks like the dude who's a son of a much more important dude that just didn't figure it out.
I want everybody to look at him for 10 seconds, and then go. And then I want you to think, okay, this guy looks like a mashup of Adam Driver and Paul Rudd.
Wow. Yeah, that's very accurate.
Yeah. And I mean long-haired Paul Rudd.
Look at us. We don't have to do it.
You could have done it.
Okay. All right.
Time. For this episode's one ad read, our one presenting sponsor, who we love very much. Hey, the thing with our sponsors is we love them. They support this show. They don't have to do it. They do it because they want to. And we love them for it. And today's presenting sponsor, we only have one.
Thanks for explaining that, Jared. Yeah. How business works. They're not forced. We don't hold them at gunpoint. They actually choose us. It's amazing. Go on.
Feels CBD. A product I stand behind, like all the products that we will
be
promoting here on Fears on Motor Functions. Ross, do you experience stress or have anxiety or chronic pain?
Jared.
Or have trouble sleeping at least once a week?
All of those things happen to me every goddamn day of my life.
Every moment of every day.
Every suffering second.
And if you listening at home responded no, I want you to send a letter to your senator asking that they declare today, I'm a huge liar day. Because you're a huge liar.
You liar.
In these scary coronavirus times, getting real here for a second, a lot of us are experiencing the anxiety that comes with having to be cooped up inside for the good of humanity.
Yeah, it sucks.
Social distancing, while absolutely necessary, can be tough on the old noggin. Oh, yeah. You're stuck indoors. You don't have the stimulation you get from being outside and interacting with people. It's tough.
It's going to be hard on all of us. We're all going to feel a little more stressed, a little more anxious, a little more tight, and that's where Feels comes in.
I've actually already personally ramped up my Feels CBD consumption because of it. I was writing a lot of the script today, and I was doing my little tincture of my CBD to chill out.
I got to get some more of this Feels in me.
Yeah.
I got to tincture up.
You know?
I love the tincture, by the way.
Tincture's great.
And the word tincture.
Tincture is a top 5 word. Kismet is number 1. Just so you know.
Okay.
Feels CBD works for me, and I really do mean it when I say that I think it can work for you as well. It is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. Feels naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, sleeplessness. It works great for instances of social anxiety as well, as I can say from experience. Place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. Feel the difference. It really is that easy. If you're new to CBD, Feels offers a free CBD hotline. Cold line.
Woo!
CBD line. And text message support to help guide your personal experience. It works naturally to help you feel better. There's no high hangover or addiction.
That's huge, by the way. First of all, that you don't have to leave, obviously.
Yeah.
Most of us aren't allowed to. It'll come straight to your door. But also, for me, Feels is the only CBD I've ever used. And when it came to my door, it was the first time I'd ever used CBD, and I was unfamiliar with how it worked in the process. And that text message line and their website and all the information that comes with your Feels when it's delivered is so, so helpful to understanding how CBD can be beneficial and useful to you. And I was very appreciative of that. Great, great company.
I really do believe Feels can help you. Like, it's helping me. CBD is all the craze right now for a reason. If you haven't tried it, you need to try it. It's like just like a popular thing, you know? Like, if you want to try popular things. I like to try popular things.
Sure, Jared.
There is a difference between the good stuff like Feels and that terrible stuff they sell at corner stores that's not Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/freeze.
If you buy CBD from a gas station, you are a freaking idiot.
Yeah, it's actually mostly antifreeze and motor oil mixed together into a sludge.
Allegedly. We have actual legit Feels here with a code and a URL.
Feels.com/freeze, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. You become a member. 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/freeze. CBD. Try it out. Tell them J-Bone sent you and Russ.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get back into it. We see a dream Caleb has of being with Francis, implying he misses him. Then another past conversation Caleb had with quote-unquote Francis played on top of present-day Caleb living out what he spoke about with Francis. That sounds confusing, but that's what happened. In this conversation, Caleb is talking about trying to get a better job. This has a great effect of showcasing the monotony and roboticness of Caleb's life, considering he had this conversation with Francis in the past, and he's still applying for jobs, still trying to get a job.
Still in the same
They did a great job of showing Caleb's loop in this episode, just like they did a great job of showing Dolores' loop.
And that's the thing.
And Maeve's loop in episode one of season one.
That's the thing Aaron Paul carries with him, and one of the reasons he was cast is he has that look of, like, I have been through some shit. When he wants it. And he had it with Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad, and he's able to put that pain and suffering on his face, and it's the same thing he's able to do here. You really feel it for the dude. And that's a feeling many people can identify with. The monotony of the same thing day after day in a job you don't like, with money you feel like you need more of, with sick family members, and it's like that. He's our guy that we're going to identify with here in obviously in a way that's going to get very complicated, right?
Yes, very much so. We then see Caleb at the therapist, who has put Caleb in the program of talking to robotic, quote-unquote, Francis. Caleb says he sometimes takes Francis's calls. We know he's denying them all the time. And he acts like he's going to start taking them more seriously and taking more calls. And then he immediately declines one when he walks out of the office and takes a Rico job. And then, right afterwards, another Francis voicemail, or not voicemail, voice conversation, plays in his head. And this is a great part of the episode, obviously, because this is where Caleb takes the job with Marshawn Lynch, a.k.a. Giggles, and it involves Marshawn Lynch, a.k.a. Giggles, getting into a fist fight with a naked man.
Yeah, turns out you shouldn't punch Giggles in the face.
No. Also, how much more do you... I've always respected Marshawn Lynch. He's been one of my favorite football players, one of my favorite athletes for a long time. The fact that he took this role and wrestled a naked man, I love it.
I love seeing him behind the scenes, too. He was, so stoked on getting to do this, and yeah, he's great.
He's such a good dude.
Very entertaining guy.
So the job is Caleb and G are supposed to calm down and remove a naked man who is high on beta-limpics, which is an experimental drug. He's a rich guy, though, so they're like, okay, this guy needs to be taken out of here and not go to jail for 20 years because he's got priors.
Right.
So the rich get preferential treatment where they can afford to have people go and cover up their mistakes.
No, it's just like the real world.
It really is. Important to note, I don't know if you noticed this, Ross. You know what? No, you definitely didn't notice this. This is something only a hero. I'm not a hero. Sorry. Only somebody like me could notice.
Okay.
There's a wolf being projected on the naked beta Olympics guy.
Oh, for the love of God.
Which definitely has something to do with the wolf that keeps showing up everywhere at the massacres, everywhere.
Wait, was there really a wolf projected onto the naked guy?
Yes, he was projected onto the wall, and he was standing in front of the projector, so it was projected on him. The wolf, Ross, the wolf is back. The wolf is here in season three. He has landed in season three. Wow. Jock is the wolf.
Wow.
Jock is the wolf.
Wow. I am just mind blown right now.
And in this scene, Giggle starts out amused, as you can tell by his shirt, but then he gets angry, as you can also tell by his shirt, when the guy punches him. And that's when he manhandles the man.
And then Giggles has to go off.
He went off. I loved it. We cut to Dolores and Liam flying on one of those flying thingies. And we learn that Insight doesn't admit it, but they control how civilization runs because Liam's dad's AI was able to be implemented to try and solve humanity's problems.
Now, what do you mean that people aren't aware that it works?
No, no. So Liam is not admitting that they're controlling everything. He's like, no, no, we're a technology company. But really, they have data on everybody and they run the world. This is.
But he does explain that the computer's very purpose was to find an exact path for every single person in an effort to make the world a better place.
Yes, exactly. That's why they were able to get it passed and implemented in the world or America or however broadly this is reaching.
Okay.
That's why they were able to get implemented.
That's sell, but then they're doing...
And then they're doing all this stuff behind the scenes. This is Facebook. Oh, we're meant to connect people so everybody
can
live more connected.
That's the one thing, I'll be honest, I don't like so far. Because
the
it's a little too on the nose.
Yeah.
No, not the parallels to Facebook necessarily, but like the... Like, it would be very... It would be a huge, 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 huge concern for every single human on the planet if at any point somebody was like, we're going to implement this thing. It's a chip you put in your head. It's going to find you a pet. We would all be like, okay, well, fuck, what's happening with the data?
Yeah.
And are you controlling us? It'd be the first question. So it's like, it's a little weird to think that's the twist we may be looking at here, that that company may be evil and actually doing bad things. And but, it's like, that's too much on the nose with what Delos did in seasons 1 and 2, where, ooh, it's a park, but, well, they're clearly doing sinister things with data. And it's like, ah.
Counterpoint.
Yeah.
You saw all the horrible, horrible things that were happening before the system was initiated.
Very good point.
Maybe this is a better alternative.
Which is always the question, right? Where's the line? With these technologies, we're saving certain things. We're able to prevent certain things, but it does it cause... Yeah, there's a weird ripple. Yeah. So,
Connells, who is Liam's handler, clearly knows something is up with Dolores, a.k.a. Lara Espin, and gives her a very foreshadowing stare down.
Mm.
And he's like, I don't like her.
He's got a feeling.
Liam shows Dolores Rehoboam, which is the system. Biblically, Rehoboam is the first king of the kingdom of Judah and the successor to Solomon. Solomon was the system that was mentioned in the Date Announced trailer. Fun fact.
Was Solomon not the man who was once the wisest alive?
Is it, right? Oh, that would be
indeed,
sense.
He was. He was the one who asked God for wisdom.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You motherfuckers are lucky I read the Bible.
Solomon Grundy is a fictional character depicted as a supervillain in DC Comics.
And I believe Solomon something else is the character in Blood Diamond.
Solomon, I ran out of Solomon, plural. He put an EN at the end. I ran out of
Solomon Vandy in Blood Diamond. I win. Now, come on, go on.
You win. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. Yeah. We learned that Insight was created to stop wasted potential, which is, inherently a good cause. We know that it is not succeeding at doing this because Caleb is shown to us as the perfect example of wasted potential. As Ash points out, he's not even being as good of a criminal as he has the potential to be. She's like, your score should be higher. And he's like, he's wasting his potential while wasting his potential. That's the extent to which Rehoboam is not working.
Yes.
Wild. So we know.
Very good point.
This system stinks. Liam has to ditch Dolores to go meet with the partner. Presumably this is the partner we learn later on locked out Liam from the system.
Okay.
And presumably also we learn this partner has some sort of stake in relationship with Delos. Very interested to see who this is. Very, right. Very interested to see who this is.
And this is Vincent Castle, the actor, right?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
Vincent Castle comes in. I believe he is going to be the Serac, whatever.
He's going to be the very top dog?
Yeah. Okay. Oh. I think he's going to be the architect.
The architect.
But not the partner. I think those are two different people.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for clarifying. Different people. Architect behind it, I think, is going to end up being Vincent Castle, who's this very famous actor who, if you Google, you'll recognize.
Yeah, that's my guess. But he could be the partner.
You're right.
Don't know.
Either way.
So Dolores spies on the partner meeting while telling a random man to fuck off. That was funny.
Yeah.
During which she learns, we learn that somebody has gained access to Rehoboam and is testing it. And we also learn that there is a mysterious he who is the head of the partner group who Liam does not like. And that this he is being impacted by what happens at Delos, like I mentioned before. We also get a comparison between Rehoboam and the Forge in terms of learning about people via data, because we have, there are two different things. Rehoboam has like information on everybody, and the Forge had information about everybody who'd been to the park. There's an interesting parallel I think is going to be at play there. Maybe the Forge was kind of the precursor to Rehoboam. Maybe they're related in that sense. I do not know.
And how much time has passed? It's like, I'm unclear on that as well. There's a lot to play.
We're not supposed to know that. Cut back to Bernard, a.k.a. Armand Delgado, in the butcher warehouse, getting discovered as Bernard the Fugitive by two of his coworkers. They team up to bring him to justice after realizing they can't blackmail him because he has nothing except a button. Could have given them the button.
He ends up giving him the button, all right.
He did give him. He gave him the button.
Oh, he gives it to him.
Yeah, but not before he's like trying to tell them his life story. No, don't hurt me. Here's what's going on. Dolores is here, and I don't. I'm way behind her, and I need to find my friends.
Like, listen, dude, I'm the only thing that could save you. And they're like, guy, what are you talking about,
dude? I want
shut
money.
The fuck up. Yeah,
it was dumb. Bad crisis management.
That was for us, though. It was for us. And so we find out sort of, you know, what Bernard's got is his sort of purpose in his head so far.
Yeah. He says Dolores is coming for them and that she's had months to plan and he's alone and he can't even trust himself, which is why he's testing himself with the button.
And he doesn't seem, yeah, he's very much still in a place of uncertainty and like he's like trying to figure it all out. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I can't do it while alone. And he like kind of tries to like ask for their help. He's like, dude, they are trying to hurt you.
Yeah. What the fuck are you doing? Just kill these guys. Come on. Hit the button.
And then he hits the button. He gives him the button. He's like, remember yourself. Please don't hurt them too badly. Narrator, he did hurt them too badly.
He did hurt them just as badly as they could be hurt.
At this point, my running theory, like I said earlier, is that Bernard is capable of channeling the sicko mode Bernard that Ford has been using.
I like that. That's it. Sicko mode Bernard. There it is.
Cut to Caleb again dreaming about being with Francis in some former Soviet state.
We're going to need somebody to edit just Bernard pressing the button, sicko mode playing, and then him going off, and then every instance of that happens this whole season. Thank you.
Thank you. Caleb is up front with quote-unquote Francis about not understanding this therapy exercise. He's like talking about, he's like mentioning the therapy exercise to the robot. And Francis responds just with some cheesy canned motivational posters you'd see in a fourth grade classroom. He's like, everybody needs someone to talk to. Keep your eyes on the prize, buddy.
Yeah, this where it sort of falls apart and you see the just how fake and hollow it all is.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Caleb gets a call from that job he applied for and finds out he didn't get it because he's thinking about Francis. He asks the guy on the other end of the phone if he's a real or a robot because he had just, you know, was thinking about Francis being
how
a robot.
Fake his other conversations and interactions were.
And this guy, too, is a robot. So he's really going down the whole, like, I need something real. I need something real. Everything around me is fake. This whole world is fake. Everything stinks.
And predetermined and shitty, yeah.
I know, everything sucks, yeah. I know, everything sucks, whoa, whoa. It's a real big fish song, Ross.
I'm not a fish guy, but cool.
Real big fish, not regular fish.
Oh, different. I'm not a real big fish guy either.
Wait, you thought I was saying that was a really big song by the band Fish and not a song by the band Real Big Fish?
You can see how that would be confusing, right?
Ross, it's a real big fish song, you know.
Jared, I think others might identify with me here.
He looks too much like Dave. That's a fish reference for you. Okay. Caleb then said a bizarre line. If I'm not a good fit, is there a different shape I could squeeze myself into? He says this to the robot guy. This is such a bad line to say to a potential employer that Caleb literally broke the HR robot. Imagine that. He said he didn't get a job and he's like, oh, okay. Well, if I'm not a good fit for that position, is there a shape I can squeeze myself into? And the robot's like, "That this is not, I can't handle
I
this,
cannot,
this is so bad.
So cheesy, cannot respond to, and then just fries, yeah.
Fries, absolutely.
Squeeze my, come on,
and
Caleb.
Then he goes and does another Rico task. We cut back to Dolores and Liam. Dolores sees
I will also note, Jared.
Oh, what?
It's an interesting sort of a
dichotomy.
Can't find a job, gotta do crime. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
That's how it is in society sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, dude. For sure.
Sometimes.
Cut back to Dolores and Liam. Dolores sees Liam is upset and uses this as an opportunity to get him to divulge sensitive information to her. We learn Liam doesn't even have real access to Rehoboam.
Liam's a fraud.
Fraud and a cuck.
Yeah.
His dad's partner, probably the partner mentioned earlier, like we said,
probably Vincent Castle.
Locked him out of the system. Wait, Vincent Castle was the architect? Oh, you jerk. You're just derailing me. The guy locked him out of the system when Liam's dad died, the guy from the commercial.
Yes.
And only the original architect has access to Rehoboam now.
Which is problematic and seems like maybe some government entities should be looking into this.
Yes. Liam then says something very interesting. He says that if he was going to tell Dolores who the original architect was, the original architect would already have had him killed because Rehoboam would have already told the original architect that Liam was going to kill him.
Now, Jared, this is where Minority Report comes into play. Because we're talking about pre-crime.
Oh.
And pre-events and such. And that's where shit gets weird. And when he made that point, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. He's like, Rehoboam would have already killed me because it would have known that I was going to betray Rehoboam.
But here's the thing. Is it because she's an AI that Rehoboam is not capable of reading that event forecoming?
Maybe.
Maybe? I don't know.
Forecoming? What? Anyways, no.
For what now?
Possibly. Yeah. Possibly. Liam is saying that Rehoboam has him so well mapped that he doesn't have free will anymore. And before we learn from Liam who controls it, if he was going to ever divulge it, Connells comes in, outs Dolores as a spy, whisks her away to dose and dump her. Rehoboam is right once again, Ross.
Crazy. Did you know Liam is short for William?
Really?
No, I have no idea.
Okay. Cut to Caleb doing that RICO job when he finds out it's a personal and gets pissed. Who says criminals don't have ethics?
And he just walks off here, right?
Yeah, the guy's...
Is that what happens?
Yeah, the guy's like trying to shoot him in the face and he's like, I've been shot in the face before, buddy. And the guy's like, no, you're cool, and just lowers his gun.
Yeah, and then we see like the scar, like he's been for sure shot in the head.
Oh, did he? I didn't see the scar. Yeah. Okay, I was supposed to see
that. I don't know what that background story is going to be, but he just literally walks away, right? He's like, fuck y'all, I don't do personals, and just walks off.
Yeah. Okay. No, well, he already had completed the task. That was the weird thing. He was just standing his ground being like, don't fuck with me. I don't do personals. You made me do a personal unwillingly. Fuck you. I'm not leaving because you're telling me to leave.
Okay, I thought it was like there was another thing to do after that that he was saying no to. And I was like, got you. Thank you for explaining.
Yeah, it was literally just like, fuck you. You're telling me to leave. I'm not leaving because you betrayed me, kind of. And then the guy's like, whatever, fine. You can just walk away on your own leisure. He walks away. While Dolores is whisked away, Caleb finally accepts a call from Francis. Meanwhile, Connells has posted up at the underpass, hoping to catch Dolores' accomplice, but eventually gives up and just tries to kill Dolores by dosing her. While trying to dose her, a car rolls up that Connells believes to be the handler he's looking for, which is the person who they said Dolores was trying to meet up with, and they're trying to, through the text message.
Mm-hmm.
And Dolores goes wild, right? Connells freaks the fuck out.
Yeah, we just wait. It was only a matter of time. They think she's a human. They're dosing her with drugs that they think are affecting human beings. She's not a human. So it was only a matter of time before she went apeshit.
Connells freaks out because he sees something in the car. Right as Dolores wakes up, stabs at one dude, shoots the other guy, goes out and shoots the other two guys, shoots Connells.
Full Terminator.
Turns backward. And I love the shot where you can see the rear view camera and she just backs up over the guy.
Knew she was going to do it.
And see also Connells. And that was awesome.
Also,
I love that scene.
It's the rule. If you back over someone, you have to drive back forward over them as well. That's a rule.
We saw that in Righteous
Gemstones.
Every
movie ever.
Righteous Gemstones.
Every movie and TV show ever. You run someone over, you must go back over them again. And then if you're in a Righteous Gemstones situation, probably a third or fourth time is needed. That motherfucker is a lot.
One of the more unique combat scenes we've ever seen on the show. Loved it.
Yep.
We then watch as Caleb breaks up with quote-unquote Francis and goes in search of something or someone real. Ooh, that was cool. We also then watch as Dolores murks Connells, not before finding out that he too has treated her poorly in Westworld. Wow.
Ah.
Is everybody just
all the
destroyed
rich white guys are trash.
Dolores?
That's the lesson here. All the rich white guys use prostitutes and drugs and murder people, and that's the lesson, okay? You got it?
Good. Mm-hmm. We find out from Connells before he gets killed by the host version of him, which is what he freaked out about before.
That was dope.
That was dope. That Serac is the one in charge of Rehoboam, and he's probably already looking for her because of Rehoboam.
Ooh.
Which we don't know if that's possible because he's a host.
We don't know. That's the thing that'll be cool about episode 2 getting into it, and I'm sure we're about to talk about that. But this whole idea, this concept of her being able to sort of place her people, right? Because she had how many balls, Jared? 8, 6?
5.
5? Whatever. 4, 3, 2. Were we doing a countdown? And she's going to be putting those in people.
Yeah.
And putting those people in strategic places to do her, you know, bidding. We've got Charlotte Hale.
Yep.
Now we got this dude.
Connells.
Things are looking up.
Dolores plans to use this host version of Connells to keep her plan moving and like try to go back to Liam and be like, oh, just kidding. She's fine. We vetted her. She's cool.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going to happen. Dolores also drops a very telling line here. She says, you were free. This is to Connells. You were free. You had no God. But you tried to build one, Rehoboam. Only that thing you built wasn't God. The real gods are coming, and they're very angry. Love this. Love this.
It ties back so well to like that, because that was such a reoccurring message in season 2, right?
Yes.
The real gods and how angry they are. The real gods she's referring to being her kind, correct?
I don't know.
It's hard to say.
It's very hard to say.
Because it's an interesting way of referring to yourselves as AI, as the real gods or whatever, when you were created.
I am the golden god. That's an It's Always Sunny reference that you still don't get.
I am a golden god is a fucking almost famous reference, though, from when he jumps off the roof.
Who?
The rock star.
What? Who's that?
In Almost Famous.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Dolores, who got injured earlier, is starting to show signs of weakness now after killing the entire security team, and then she encounters...
She can be hurt. She can be killed.
I wrote in my notes, she encounters Jesse. And I'm going to have a hard time not saying... I never even watched Breaking Bad.
What's his name in the show?
Caleb.
Caleb.
Or Cal.
Caleb. Caleb. Not Jesse. Caleb.
Yes.
But she's fucked up. This is the thing you got. Yes. It's a good reminder. Dolores can be hurt and Dolores can be killed. She is not...
invincible.
Immortal. Yeah. She's just AI. So we don't know to what degree...
leaky fluids or whatever.
They can be recovered. Yeah. Their balls in their head thing situation is very much... but they can be killed. They can be stopped by human means.
Indeed. We then see Bernard and she, you know, they help out. Clearly they're about to have some relationship together. Maybe dating...
Caleb and her?
Yeah.
Caleb is very much like...
They might go out to like a Fuddruckers and like a burger.
She literally falls into his arms, as they point out in the after show conversation, the same way she falls into Teddy's arms. Beautiful. In the other seasons, yeah.
We then see Bernard charter a boat to take him to Westworld to meet up with an old friend.
You gotta assume it's Maeve.
Because of the post-credit scene, we see Maeve in Reichworld.
Reichworld.
Don't quote that.
Okay, that's we don't know yet.
You called it Third Reich World. I shortened
it. I've seen War World.
Too hard to say.
Here's the only reason it makes sense though, because War World would be like you can go do any war from history, rather than it being like here's a park that only caters to anti-Semites and people who are really really into World War II.
That's a good point.
Like, why the fuck would you go to Hitler World, bro?
If you want to kill Hitler.
Ah, see? Another idea. So, I don't know. I'm just saying.
They shouldn't let you be on the Nazi side.
Is it just...
They shouldn't let you be on the Nazi side.
Is it just Nazi Germany that we're looking at? Anyway, very excited.
Apparently
to see
it's
how
Italy.
Maeve plays into this.
Apparently, they're in, like, fascist Italy.
Okay.
But it's, like, German-occupied. Not
well,
occupied,
clearly, there's,
but, you know,
oh,
Nazi,
it's very
Nazi
occupied.
Italy. Well, they were allies.
Yeah, well, sure, in World War II history.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's what the part's based off of. Ross.
Oh,
Jesus.
I don't know.
It's true. Ross, that's it. That was season 3, episode 1.
Yeah, we get an post-credit scene with Maeve, looking great by the way, but very much Nazi looking. She looks like she's on the wrong goddamn side. And we've got our boy Caleb meets up with our girl Dolores.
Yeah.
Huge. We're introduced to this world, all these new technologies that exist, sort of the baseline Google, Facebook company that's sort of behind all this shit. Lot of stuff. Here's what I love about episode 1.
Yes.
Very clear cut in terms of here are the pieces you need to see.
Yes.
And
no time
that
skips.
Was,
no.
Yep.
The only time skip was the voicemail thing, but that was more of a cinematic piece.
You didn't even need to get that to get what was going on
with
it, because I didn't fully get it until you explained it, and I was fine. I still got the same things I needed out of the episode. That's not how seasons 1 and 2 went.
Ah, yes.
We were very, very confused most of the time.
You had your head on the table. I would be explaining something, and you would
just
smash.
Like,
you had a bloody forehead one day. You kept whacking your head. I was like, Ross, they can hear that on the mics. It's getting picked up.
It was like Pennywise and It too. It was fucked. The whole thing, it's been so confusing that it was so refreshing to get a more clear-cut premise for a season. The way this whole thing was laid out was beautiful. I thought that Aaron Paul did a phenomenal job sort of like not trying to do too much with Caleb, just letting it work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Dolores and everybody else, just stellar stuff. The outfits, the fucking fashion, the way they did all the futuristic stuff, the bikes. You got to watch the behind-the-scenes stuff that HBO puts out for this, all the interviews and shit. It's going to be so cool to see how they made all this. And I'm hoping, Jared, my fear is that we're not going to get much Maeve for a while. Like, it might be episodes 3 or 4. You know how they do this.
Yeah.
Writers are good about this. They could reserve it, sort of hold it back so that you got that thing in the back of your head that you're looking forward to, the carrot, very much so. But I could be wrong. It could be next week we dive straight into
Could be.
Who knows? But I got to find out what's going on over there.
We do.
In that park. And who these people are who are paying to go to. Got to know, Jared.
And it's time now for the announcements. There's one announcement for this week. One only.
Just one.
Announcement. Just one.
Listen to this one announcement.
This, my friends, the fam. This is not the last episode of Freeze All Motor Functions this week. There will be one more on Thursday.
Oh my God.
And it will be on our Patreon along with a bunch of other bonus content.
Wow.
Yes. As many of you know, in the past, our Thursday analysis mode episodes, which are hotline calls, theories, predictions, Those were on Thursdays, and in the past, they were available for free. However, because like I mentioned earlier, Ross and I no longer are doing FAMP for salary and are doing this on our own time, we had to put the Thursday analysis mode episodes behind a paywall for season three.
Yeah, basically the way the podcast business works is you have advertisers and they pay you to do things, and there's X amount of advertising space and demand, and you kind of got to work to monetize your show in whatever ways you can. Patreon is a phenomenal way for creators like Jared and I to be able to do that. So if you want to support the podcast and get a bunch more FAMP content in exchange, this is the perfect way to do it. Keep the podcast rolling, get Jared and I sufficiently paid, and you get more FAMP.
As far as what you get with your Patreon subscription, $10 a month gets you an absolute treasure trove of bonus FAMP content that will cover all of Westworld Season 3.
What's the URL?
Patreon.com/freezeallmotorfunctions.
Oh, that's easy to remember.
It is, right? It's going to be every single week of Season 3 plus some postseason content. That's $20 for over two entire months of entertainment.
Sweet Jesus.
You can't beat it. $20 would last you 5 minutes at a Dave & Buster's, and we're giving you, and I did the math here, Ross, around 17,560 times better value.
Now think about this for a second, folks. You're going to be stuck in your house or apartment or wherever you are, hopefully somewhere comfy and not too shitty, for an extended period of time as a result of these circumstances we're dealing with in March of 2020.
Sad reality.
We got you, baby. Throw the $20 you would have spent at the bar that you can no longer go to us. We'll bring you the pods and the columns.
We've got the meat pods.
Yeah, and we'll give you, and we'll also consider bringing meat pods to your house. They're like Tide Pods, but they're filled with meat juice.
And kids can actually eat them.
They're for children, you see.
What? Oh my God. Okay. With the $10 a month preferred guest subscription on Patreon, that comes out to $20 for the full season. And each week during Westworld Season 3, you'll get the Thursday Analysis Mode Hotline episode every Thursday, which includes access to the Patreon-only hotline, which Analysis Mode episodes will be by Patreon subscribers for Patreon subscribers.
So you can only call in and ask a question or give a take if you're a subscriber. And then obviously we will be only answering those questions for those people.
Yes. You also get exclusive to Patreon Westworld columns, knee-jerk reactions, memes, and more from Jared, that's me, Ross, and the artist formerly known as Intern Serena. She'll be writing a weekly Serena column and also putting some memes on there. Ross, tell us about Blazing Saddles. Is that going to come to Patreon?
Blazing Saddles is where I smoke marijuana and I watch the episode of Westworld and then I write what I think I just saw. And typically, it's very incorrect. And then Jared and I will do our podcast and we'll find out just how incorrect. But yeah, in addition to stuff like Jared already put up his knee-jerk reaction to episode one. I believe there might be a video of you eating a pomegranate or something. What is this? Oh,
it's a pomegranate meme. Don't tell
them. It's a surprise. It's a surprise for everybody who's on there.
There's a Q&A. We did a Q&A.
Pre-season three premiere Q&A, yes. So people could throw out questions and he was answering them. He did a how you could quickly get caught up on Westworld before season three. There's going to be all kinds of great stuff on Patreon.com/freezeallmotorfunctions all season long. Y'all get on there, become a preferred guest or a best guest if you're the best. Yes. Support the show, get more FAMP.
Yep. There's other stuff, other benefits you can go check out at patreon.com/freezeallmotorfunctions. They're awesome. They include merch. Merch is going to be available only to Patreon people.
Ooh.
And like we said, if you're a $30 a month subscriber called a best guest, you get a bunch of other stuff, including a special personalized and particularly poignant, which I'm going to start saying poignant now. I got to change it up.
Poignant?
Poignant.
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 There you go.
Poignant thank you message at the end of every Monday recap episode. This is a Monday recap episode. We have a best guest already. Her name is Renee.
Renee!
She's a badass.
Fucking love you, Renee. Thank you so much.
Renee, thank you for becoming a best guest. Before the Monday episode, you're the first best guest. You're the best.
Renee, I was only going to get to have a half of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for dinner tonight, but now I'm going for the whole fucking thing.
Renee, thank you so much for supporting the show. Also, thank you so much for spelling Renee like it sounds, R-E-N-A-E, and not making people's lives harder by making them have to search for how to do the little accent over the E. Which, if you have a Mac, it's Option plus E. You hold down Option, press E, take your finger off Option, then hit E again.
Never doing that.
Oh, exactly. That's why Renee's nice for not spelling her name the hard way.
Good for her.
Yes. If you want a shout out, be a best guest. You'll get one on the next episode.
Best guest.
That does it for this episode of Freeze on Motor Functions. We're so happy to be back. We're happy to have you here.
We're really doing it,
Jared. We're doing it.
It's season three. It's happening. And we're going to make it. Folks, we got nothing else to do. Let's watch Westworld and enjoy it together. Break it down. Digest it. Dissect it. Talk about it on fucking social media. On Patreon.com/freezeallmotorfunctions. We're going to survive.
Ross, you know what time it is?
No.
It's time for the NPR style sign off. Freeze All Motor Functions is brought to you by Bolin Media and hosted by me, Jared Borislow, along with Ross Bolin. This show was recorded by Mariah Gossett at Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas. Special thanks to Phil from DC, aka Schnapple, on SoundCloud for our intro music, Brad Hess for our outro music, and Serena, who does insanely awesome Westworld and Freeze All Motor Functions themed Photoshop work you can find on our Twitter at Freeze All Motor, Instagram at Freeze All Motor Functions, and at patreon.com/freezeallmotorfunctions. We're back, baby!
Freeze All Motor Functions.